The scripture reading this morning is Hebrews chapter 12, verses 4 through 6. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as son. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Thank you, Reuben. Let me invite you to open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. Now, as you're turning, let me just mention one thing. I don't know how often you take time to look on the bulletin board back here at the back. We don't have room in the bulletin to publish all the thank you notes and other kinds of notes that we receive, and so we post those back here. And you're missing out if you don't occasionally look through those notes, because there are some very heartfelt thank yous and very encouraging words that are posted there. This morning, there's a beautiful expression of gratitude from Clifford and Carol Allen. So take time occasionally to take note of those notes on the board, and I know you'll be encouraged by doing so. In his book, Eye of the Storm, Max Lucado relates a very funny story at the beginning of that particular book, and he talks about a lady who owned a parakeet named Chippy, and she decided one day to clean Chippy's cage with her vacuum cleaner, and so she took the attachment off the end and just stuck the hose in the bottom of the cage. And about that time, the phone rang, and when she turned to answer the phone, the hose adjusted upward, and she heard a funny noise and looked around to find the cage empty, and she panicked and opened her vacuum cleaner, and there in all that dirt and lint was the bird, still alive but very confused and somewhat bad shape. And so she immediately took that lint covered bird and ran into the bathroom and turned on the faucet and stuck the bird under the faucet to get all the dirt off of him. And then did what any good bird owner would do, finding her bird cold and wet. She took her hair dryer and blasted him with the hair dryer and managed to get him back in his cage again. And several days later, a reporter who wrote up this story in the paper called to find out what condition the bird was in, and this is what she said. She said, "Chippy doesn't sing much anymore. He just sits and stares." Now, some of you have been through ordeals that made you probably feel a lot like that poor parakeet. You have been hit with some unexpected or unwanted ordeal. And we as a nation are going through some tough times. Some of you have had half of your paper profits evaporate, and you, along with many others across our land, are hoping and praying that they'll come back. The prospect of unemployment is looming on the horizon of many folks across our land, and there are those within this church family that are facing that very real prospect. For others, you've had a serious illness loom it, raise its ugly head within your family, and you feel absolutely helpless in confronting this illness. Or perhaps your ordeal takes the form of some sin struggle that you continue to battle. Perhaps it's a divorce. Perhaps it's some faith struggle. Perhaps it's some mental illness or disorder within your family. Whatever your ordeal is, we all have these kinds of struggles and crises that come our way. And before we read again this section in Hebrews 12 that talks about God using discipline in our lives to bring about good results, I want us to be clear about what God does do and what God does not do in this area of tragedies and ordeals. God wants us to know, and he makes clear in this passage where he talks about his discipline, that he disciplines us only in the way that good parents discipline their children. God disciplines us in love. Now, I think that'll help us to differentiate between tragedies that occur that are not God's doing and those forms of discipline that we'll occasionally see in our life that are God's doing. He always works as a parent. Now, my parents loved me, and they were good parents, and they disciplined me, and sometimes they withheld privileges during my teenage years. I was grounded occasionally because of things I'd done that were not right. My parents also made me pay financially in some ways, occasionally. If I did something that I was not responsible, I was irresponsible for, they would sometimes make me pay for those matters, or they would withhold an allowance when I was younger. And so I had to pay in that way. They even occasionally used the Board of Education that hung over the kitchen sink in an effort to discipline my brother and myself. But my parents never did things that would damage me terribly in a permanent way. They never exposed me, for instance, to a fatal illness. They never took the life of a close friend of mine, someone I cared about. They never endangered my life in that way. Now, Satan does things like that in our lives. God is capable of taking even these tragedies that God brings into our life, and he can use those to make us better, to teach us valuable life lessons. But his discipline is always a measured discipline. His discipline is always designed for our good, for our betterment. So don't confuse the discipline of God with the attack of Satan. And don't blame God for what Satan is doing in this fallen world. So whenever you wonder, is it God that's doing this in my life? Just ask yourself, would a loving parent use this ordeal that I'm dealing with as discipline? Or is it something far worse than that, something that can only be attributed to the work of Satan? Now listen to what he says here. We want to read the entire context. So begin in verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 12 as he discusses this area of godly discipline. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline. And do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those whom he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirit and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. You know, sometimes in order to get our attention, God will inflict some kind of disciplinary pain into our lives. He always does it for our good. He does it as a corrective in our lives. You know, I look at this current recession that we're in, and I sometimes wonder, is this from God or is it from Satan? Is this God trying to discipline our nation? And I just wonder, would God do that? Would a loving father, if he saw his children among the most affluent in all the world, if he saw that they were becoming dependent upon their possessions, if he saw that they were maybe not sharing the bounty of his riches, would he reduce the level of their incomes for a period of time? I think God does discipline in ways like this. I think that's a very real way in which God brings about hardship at times in our lives. C.S. Lewis wrote, "God whispers to us in our pleasures, he speaks to us in our conscience, but he shouts in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world." Now, in this passage, we see several truths of God that are revealed. Number one, if God disciplines you in your life, know this, it is always done out of love. Look back in verse 6 at what he says. He's talking about discipline, and he says, "Because the Lord disciplines those whom he loves." You know, that's a great comfort. Anything God's going to do in order to help me be a better person, he's doing it out of love. I remember hearing those words and then speaking those words to my own children. This is going to hurt me worse than it hurts you. Remember that? I didn't believe it when I was a child, but it's true. My experience from the other side of the equation showed me the truth of that. It is more painful as a parent to allow your child to go through the hardship and deal with the consequences of their poor decision. And when God does that, he's doing it out of love. With my girls, I love them too much to allow them to go through life never reaping the consequences of their actions. So I made demands, and I limited their freedom, and I cramped their style, and they didn't always understand it at the time, and there were times that they were resentful of that. But later on, I earned their respect. And that's the way fathers operate with their children. God also has done everything that he's ever done in the area of discipline, or that he ever will do, with our ultimate good in mind. Look again in verse 10. It says, "Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness." He's making us more like him. He's making us into holy people through these acts of discipline. Now, I didn't always discipline like I should have. There were times when I did too little, and there were times when I did too much. There were times when I was simply inconsistent in the way I responded to my children. But God is perfect, always, in his discipline. Never too much, never too little, always consistent, and always done to bring about the best results in our lives. And so when I feel his hand of discipline in my life, that ought to change my attitude towards whatever hardship it is that I'm going through. And then thirdly, God's discipline is always measured. We learned that from the passage back in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, down in verse 13. There Paul wrote, "God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear, but when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it." Now, God allows temptations and struggles and trials into our lives, but in all these areas, he measures what he gives us. He will never give you more than you can bear. Now, I know in saying this that some of you probably right now feel overwhelmed with some struggle in your life at this very moment. And I've talked to a lot of people throughout my years with this congregation and other places elsewhere, and I've talked to people who said, "I don't know if I can make it. I feel absolutely overwhelmed." But I've observed something, and you've seen it too. People who say that, who put their trust in God, somehow, some way, find a reserve deep down inside, and I believe I know where that reserve comes from. And somehow they put one foot in front of the other, and somehow they make it through, and then one day they'll look back and they'll say, "With God's help, I made it through a terrible time." And God promised that he'll never overwhelm us. He'll never give us more than his grace will sustain in any of these tragedies that come our way. If you could have a perfect life, if you were the God of your life instead of the Lord Jesus Christ, and if you could lay out your future from this day forward, and if you could have absolutely anything that you wanted, how would you plan out your life in the future? More money? Better health? If you could run the clock back, would you? You? Better house? Better car? I would imagine that if you could choose any life you wanted, that somewhere in there would be a clause about there not being pain. Who chooses pain? No suffering, for who would willingly embrace suffering? I think we might be very easy on ourselves. But I remember years ago, I used to enjoy watching Twilight Zone with Rod Serling. And one of those episodes, there was an episode about a man who was a gangster, and he was shot to death in a gangland robbery. And suddenly he appeared before the angel in heaven, and he was ushered into his final reward. And as he went through those gates, they weren't pearly gates, they were the gleaming stainless steel gates of a casino. And he walked in, and the man at the gate knew his name and greeted him by name, and this cocktail waitress came over and handed him his favorite drink on a silver tray, and he looked in, and he had on a beautiful tuxedo. And as he walked through the doors, he felt something, and he looked in his pockets, and they were absolutely filled with $100 bills. And as he walked over, someone said, "Would you like to play poker?" He loved poker. And he sat down at the table and he began to play, and he won every hand. And he got up and walked over and he put some money in one of the slot machines, and he pulled the arm and he hit the jackpot. And he put another coin in and he hit a jackpot again, and he went over to the gaming table and he threw the dice, and every time he threw the dice there came up seven. And he couldn't believe his fortune. He said, "This is wonderful." And that evening, after he had won all these piles of money, he had a wonderful feast. He went up to a bedroom that was luxurious beyond belief. And the next day, he came downstairs and he started winning again. And he won all day long. And this went on for about 3 or 4 days. And finally, he just stopped. And he went over to the man at the door and he said, "I hate to complain, but," he said, "heaven is wonderful, but this is getting boring." And the gatekeeper said, "No, you misunderstand." He said, "This is not heaven. This is hell. If we had everything that we wanted, if we never had sorrow, if we never had suffering, if there was never a shadow in our life, what kind of person would you be? What kind of character would you have? You would be so shallow and so selfish. Your life wouldn't even be worth living." You see, you may not realize it, and you may not believe it, but a life without pain, a life with no discipline, would be a meaningless life. Pain is what makes us stronger. Discipline is what gives us perspective. How would you ever know and appreciate joy without ever having experienced sorrow? How would you ever experience peace if you had never known conflict? You see, the truth that most people never really come to grips with in this life is there is a benefit and a blessing beyond measure from the tragedies that we all experience as we move through life. In Romans chapter 5, Paul explained that truth in verses 3 and 4. He said, "We also rejoice in our suffering because we know that suffering produces perseverance. And perseverance, character. And character, hope." Now, when we have discipline from God or tragedy from Satan in our life, know this: God can use all of these things to ultimately bless us in ways that we could never even imagine being blessed. Well, the reality is that we can't choose our life. We can't make our life easy. We live in a world that is filled with trials and with pain. Now, the choice is simply what we do with whatever comes our way. You can live in a world of pain and struggles with God, or you can live in a world of pain and struggles without God. That's the choice. And in that choice, we're really choosing whether or not we live a life with pain that has purpose to it, or whether we're living a life that has pain that is senseless. Here in Hebrews 12, the writer gives us two different kinds of illustrations. First of all, he uses that of an athlete, one who runs, and he says, put aside all the things that are in your way. Get in training, drop the weight, do whatever it takes. And this is describing a person that is self-disciplined. This is probably the minority group in any crowd, those who are able to use self-discipline and take value and that kind of thing. Most of us, I feel like, fall into the second category, for it requires a loving father to discipline us when we're not self-disciplined. Dave Gravecki understood both kinds of discipline. Some of you followed his career. He was a pitcher. He was a disciplined athlete. Pitched for the San Francisco Giants, but he got cancer in his pitching arm. He went through a series of treatments and was able to get back out there on the pitcher's mound. And he wrote a book called Comeback. But that comeback didn't last long. In his second game, he was throwing the ball, and the bone in his pitching arm shattered. He went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, I don't think we're going to be able to save your arm. In fact, they had to amputate not only his entire arm, but his shoulder. He wrote another book, and he entitled it, When You Can't Come Back. But he was determined to use whatever came his way to be a blessing. And he traveled the world as a Christian motivational speaker. And he wrote this following his travels around this globe and observing suffering and tragedy in all these different places. He said, I learned as I talked with Christians from around the world that one of the distinct differences between American Christianity and Christianity as practiced in the rest of the world is this. Only in America do American Christians pray for the burden of suffering to be lifted from their back. In the rest of the world, Christians just pray for stronger backs. I wonder if we in our nation have become soft. I wonder if sometimes we have become selfish. I wonder if we don't really understand the value and the discipline of God and even the tragedies that Satan throws in our path. The final truth about the discipline of God and the suffering of Satan is that all suffering, whether it's the loving, measured discipline of a holy God, or whether it's a destructive, malignant blow from Satan himself, all of it, for the Christian, can have purpose. All of it can be redeemed by God. We well know that suffering does not automatically produce stronger, sweeter people of character. Sometimes suffering creates bitter, angry, shriveled souls. I've seen it happen, and you have too. Why the difference? It all comes down to our choice, how we react to whatever comes our way. The same heat that melts butter hardens the egg. I can accept God's discipline for what it is in my life, loving guidance. Or I can blame God and become bitter. It's my choice. I can accept the tragedies that Satan brings into my life and try to find a way to use that tragedy for good, like Dave Gravecki did. Or I can become mean-spirited and spiteful. The most amazing thing? If I choose God even in the midst of my suffering and pain, He will give me grace for every challenge. And something even greater, He will allow me to enter a partnership with Him and become His hands in a world that is filled with sorrow and suffering. And He will allow me to minister to others who are sharing the same kind of pain that I've been through. I know that's true because this church is filled with those kind of people. We've got a member in this congregation who has battled alcoholism for years, and at a time his job and family and health were all in jeopardy. But through the grace of God, he's overcome, and he now ministers to others who are dealing with this same addiction. We've got a member here in this congregation who grew up and during his childhood years was abused in a variety of ways that left deep scars on him. Later on, he began to have struggles mentally because of this. He lost his job. He lost his family. He, for a period of time, lost his sanity. But by the grace of God, he's come through that. And he is an advocate across our nation for the mentally ill. He helps run a support group right here in this church family. There are people, and I could go on and on and listen, there are people who have been through divorces. There are people here who have been wronged in the business world. There are people here who have had tragedy within their families that are, it's almost unspeakable. And yet who have come through by the grace of God and who now are in turn reaching out and helping other people in similar circumstances. And God is glorified and lives are blessed because God has the grace for every situation. God can redeem the greatest tragedies that occur in our lives. It is so wonderful to serve a God who teaches us lessons and develops character in spite of the bad things that happen in this world. And let me tell you, if you've not gone through a tragedy, you're going to if you live long enough. But we have a God who can bring good out of the worst things that happen in this world. And he's the God who this morning longs to have a relationship with you. If you're not a Christian, won't you come to him today? If you need prayers from God's people, ask this morning. We'll pray for you as we did at early service. Lisa Cox asked us to pray for her, and we stopped and we prayed for her this morning. If you need prayer, if you need the forgiveness that comes only through the blood of the Lamb, we invite you to come as we stand this morning with him.